I have a great deal of respect for them. Doc Searles and the senior editor of Linux Journal and Elliot Noss from Tucows. Both of these guys have just some really provocative thinking and some great things to sort of challenge your thinking and ideas of sort of what's ahead for all of us to share with us this week. So please join me in giving a warm welcome to Elliot Noss, the CEO of Tucows, and Doc Searles.
What I wanted to kind of get you started with was this concept of the fifth utility. You know, we kicked around a few ideas, and you know, tell me about the fifth utility.
Okay, well, I was thinking of what I'd remember what the first four were, and all I could come up with at first was earth, air, fire, and water, and I actually realized that they kind of line up with roads, waste treatment, electricity, and water. If you think about it, the what's happening with the with the net, and I say this not just as somebody who's running for Linux Journal, but as a citizen of Santa Barbara. In Santa Barbara, we've been, as ordinary citizens in Santa Barbara for a number of years, have been looking for more than we're getting out of our local cable and phone providers. But, and it's not a knock on them, it's just there's more demand than they can meet in terms of pure raw bandwidth. And I realize, and a number of other people have as well, that there's that the net itself is a utility. The net is a fundamental thing. It is as fundamental to civilization as these things that grace us with civilization and underlie our civilization, and in fact support our civilization and all the business on it, which are our road system, water systems, waste treatment systems, electricity. And I don't necessarily include cable and phone in that. I think those are, we can call those utilities. I think those are businesses that serve a utilitarian purpose. But the way the market works right now, and the way what my friend Bob Frankston, who's the co-inventor of the spreadsheet, the way he calls it the regulatorium, the way the regulatorium works in the U.S. at least, and I think it's similar in Canada, it's not necessarily the same in other countries. For whatever reasons, we're not getting the broadband that we want. We're not getting the high bandwidth, the high throughput, the ability to do lots and lots of business and deliver lots and lots of services on top of something. So what's happening is that ordinary citizens and their local representatives are coming together to some degree. We know there's I think that this show is more about Muni Wireless than it is around Muni Fiber. But in the case of Santa Barbara, there actually isn't that much appetite for wireless. There's a lot of appetite for fiber. And so how do we do that is a question that's on the floor. And a first step toward that is recognizing that the net itself is a fundamental utility. There's a will in our town, in Utah, in Lafayette, Louisiana, and a lot of other small, generally smaller regions, to regard the net as something that we all need.
So there's a couple important threads there that I want to pull out. Yeah. You know, this is a room that, you know, historically, if you were here 3, 4, 5 years ago, you know, it was all access providers. And over time, that's really started to become more of a blend. You know, when you talked about, well, cable and voice, those aren't really utilities, you know, cables and telcos. You know, I mean, aren't they really applications?
Oh, I think certainly telephony is an application, and television is an application. I think that I actually believe that we do both of them, both those kinds of carriers, a little bit of a disservice in thinking that we can only get the net from them. Unfortunately, for most citizens, the net is in fact gravy on top of your phone or your cable bill. I think that's a transient thing. I think in the long run, people are going to want to get internet service everywhere they go, and it's just available there.
Well, I think that, you know, this is a room full of people who, you know, unless there is the token telco guy in here.
Oh, I know they're more than token, and I think there's more than a few here, actually.
Well, but, you know.
Will you all please stand up if you're a telco guy?
And yeah, so we can identify you. And
there's one. There's a couple hands back there.
No, but, you know, see, Donnie is a perfect example of you know, he's not a telco guy. He's an ISP guy who became a telco. And
okay.
So, you know, I think
how'd that happen?
Well, we can, Donnie, when's your panel? So Doc can find out how that happened. But, you know, I think that the important point, you know, to sort of focus on there is that for, you know, the folks in this room, the network
right.
is separate from the services. Really is a platform for them. And, you know, you've talked lots about that.
Yeah, well, it helps to separate these things logically, but I think functionally people are seeing it that way as well. And I think on the net, the appearance of Skype and Vonage and other services like that have showed that, well, my gosh, I can get telco on here. I can get television. I get a form of television with YouTube and other similar things like that. What's interesting about this is that as the services proliferate, they're going to strip the gears of the single service providers. And I think that requires separating the services from the underlying network.
There's an important market dynamic, though. And this is where, to me, Muni movement gets really exciting, is that, you know, where is that competition going to come from? And I'm a big believer that, you know, what that Muni framework can do is sort of set the platform for the people in this room. You know, these are the guys. You know, I look at this sort of there's kind of an army of small, medium, and, you know, up to large. Think about 100,000 customers, service providers,
right,
who can really start to leverage that stuff.
Right. I want to finish unpacking what I meant by stripping the gears, though, because
I
think, for example, all of us, I think, pretty much have asymmetrical service to our houses. In the meantime, one of the things that's happened on the net is that everybody is a producer and not just a consumer anymore. And asymmetrical service was set up for pure consumption, generally of one kind of thing. We all look forward to everybody getting piles of TV. What's happening, we're producing our own TV. We're all producers as well as consumers. Who even is a consumer of digital photography anymore? We actually produce. We produce massive amounts of it. And there's a demand for storage. There's a demand for manipulation of those things. There's a demand for services. I think that the real key is, in fact, the service providers. I think the service providers, you guys, are going to be the ones that help us define what we're going to do at the municipal level with the build-outs that are independent of the existing carriers, giving the existing carriers some clues about what their partners really ought to be in this thing, that they don't need to carry the entire burden themselves, because I think that's the way they tend to think about things. And because they have such big lobbying organizations, because they live inside the regulatorium, they've lived in this kind of almost a protected habitat for a long time, they're very much in tune with what's happening in Washington, where the cable guys want to get into the phone business, the phone guys want to get into the cable business, and both of them are imagining, to a large degree, exactly two services out of a countless number of services. And you guys are the ones, I think, that have to come up with the rest of those services.
Well, and it's, you know, there's one thing I want to tell you about that, as you said that, you know, about asymmetrical. You know, I was in Central Europe about a month ago, visiting, you know, kind of a bunch of customers, about 8 different countries. In every single country, the biggest hosting company in the country was an independent. Nobody went outside of their national boundaries. It was a local business. The amazing thing, I'm in Slovenia, and there's a company, T-2.net, you know, T-2.net, competitive service provider. First time I've ever seen in the world, you could buy 5 megs down, 1 meg up. 10 megs down, 1 meg up. 10 megs down, 2 megs up. 10 megs down, 10 megs up. 40 down, 10 up.
In other words, whatever you want. They provision whatever you want.
Not whatever you want. They had about 12 different flavors
at
different prices. But, you know, it was kind of, you know, and I'm saying to this small country of 2 million people, I'm saying to my customers there, you know, do you guys realize how lucky you are? You know, I've been all over the world, you know, speaking to service providers.
Yeah.
This was by far the best network service provisioning I've ever seen. And that's the kind of thing that just ain't going to happen here. Now,
ain't going to happen. I mean,
well,
ain't going to come from the carriers.
Ain't going to come from the carriers. Okay. That's right. And so, you know, you and I, you know, have the luxury.
I actually think it will, but it won't come now.
It will. Maybe not in our lifetime.
I think when the writing is on the wall, it will start to come. We've got to put the writing up there.
It'll be if the people in this room force them to.
But, right.
You know,
that's exactly
you and
right.
I were, you know, had the luxury of spending some time with Jim Ballard a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess it's about a month and a half ago now.
Right.
And, you know, Jim Ballard is a lawyer who fights a lot of these Muni wireless battles. I think he's spoken here before as well. And he said, and I'd never heard him say this. He was, you know, most of the guys who spend their time fighting telcos and cable cos are invariably negative, discouraged. You know, it's pretty tough. They're always outgunned and outmanned. He said that when it came to Muni, and this is now Muni Networks, not wireless or fiber, just Muni Networks, they had given up. And so that now...
They being the carriers telcos, at the local level.
No, the telcos and cable cos had given up trying to stop it. You know, now these projects are going on, and the door has become open because every single project that I've been able to find, you know, through sort of various number of sources, a bunch of which you know, has mandated wholesale in it. So now that's mandated wholesale, whether it's being provided by the municipality, by a third-party provider, by Earthlink, by some, you know, a local provider, and I know some of the people in this room have bid on some of these projects. But that mandated wholesale piece means that every single one of you guys, if it's happening anywhere near local to you, or if you want to reach out to that, can buy that, resell it, and most importantly, layer on all of the services, simple stuff, email, hosting, et cetera, where all of the real consumer need is, customer need is, and all the money's being made. So when you think about that, you think about that Muni Wireless world, you're looking at you know, you're, Muni Networks, and you're looking at Santa Barbara, you know, are the telcos and cable cos going to come in and just kind of own that too?
No. They're not going to own it right away. They're not going to own it at all, I should say, because the service layer is not one where they have an offering that exceeds one or two things. And that's not the business they've been in. That's not what they're optimized for. That's not the fight they have in Washington. I think at a national level they've felt for some time, and I think the net neutrality fight that they had to fight in Washington in some ways backfired, I think, because it made them very hypersensitive. They felt very beleaguered about that. You know, in the long run, they're going to be in the game somewhere. The thing is that they need to figure out where they're going to fit in this thing. In the meantime, it's up to a lot of municipalities, it's up to a lot of individuals, it's up to service companies and, you know, ISPs coming in and saying, here's how we can help you out. Here's how we can help you conceive this thing. That to me is one of the important things about the utility. The utility is the network. The utility is just pure connectivity. You're connected, you're on, now let's talk about speed later and the rest of the base level provisioning. But the Slovenian model is one that independent businesses are going to have to bring over here. You know, we were talking in Denmark several weeks ago, and everything's been pretty much unbundled in Denmark. Lots of people are pulling fiber. Lots of people are putting up Wi-Fi. It's not necessarily chaos. There's just a lot of business. What's happening in Copenhagen itself is that there are a lot of these small businesses. There's one called Indie.net, INDIE.net, if you want to look it up. I think it's IndieNet. .com, maybe it is. I'm not sure. No, indienet.dk. Okay, that's what it is. Anyway, indienet.dk. It's several guys who do nothing but pull fiber and pull copper inside cooperative apartment buildings, and they'll put fiber under the streets because everybody seems to know how to pull up cobblestone and put it back down again. You know, they have these completely disassemblable streets in Denmark that make it very easy to come in on a Sunday, pull up a bunch of cobblestones, put in some conduit, put some fiber through the conduit, drop the cobblestones back down again, and you've now hooked together two or three buildings, and they're doing it from the edge in at the network level. And the important thing about those guys is that they're not providing any services at all. It's like we're not triple play. We're like one play, and that play is it's on or off, and we're the guys you call if it's off.
Well, see, there's an important thing that I want to make sure that we don't communicate here. Because I've seen this before kind of, in an ISPCon audience. For me, I feel very strongly that the place where you guys win invariably is in providing simply better customer service, a better customer experience to most end users. And all you've got to do there, by the way, the bar isn't set too high. That means better customer service than the telcos and cable cos. You know, the amazing thing is, and, I tease Doc about this all the time, people still don't know how to use email well. People don't know how to use anti-spam well. When I say I tease Doc, he has the biggest tech support network in the world. He's got a domains problem. He calls me. He's got an email problem. He calls, the CTO of some big company. Or he posts it on his blog.
I just call one of my hacker friends.
And human beings don't have that. What they generally have is you guys.
Not us, human beings, right?
The distinction
is clear,
We'll flesh that out later. Yeah. So, they have you guys. And that's a place where, you know, whether it's the telco, whether it's the cable co, whether it's Google, whether it's Yahoo, whether it's Microsoft, none of them can compete with you. So, you know, to me, the exciting thing about that network is
not only that, they need you.
Yeah.
They need you because they're thinking one thing. I mean, Google, all due credit to Google, Google has turned into every startup. This is like an interesting thing about startups. Every startup has a broad horizontal vision. In Google's case, it was, we're going to bring all the world's information to you, right? And they always fall into one vertical and get sucked into that. In Google's case, it's advertising. You know, they are the big advertising company, and advertising drives that company to a large degree. That's not a knock on them, but that's the economic prism through which they look at things. And there are, you know, all these big companies have to have help from third parties, from other people who are on the ground, have the actual relationships with customers. The real relationships with the customers are what matter. Now, I would like to see your in poker language, I'll see your point about simplicity and helping the customers do their email and so forth, and raise it one complexity, because I think there are a lot of what individual customers are going to want to do is business on their own, okay? I think a very big part of what you're going to be doing is helping independent and small entrepreneurs, small office, home office, do business on the net. So an interesting thing, so for example, in Santa Barbara, the largest single employer in Santa Barbara is self. It's individuals, okay? And that's true across the board. I mean, even and I'm sure, Elliot, you know this, large companies of all sizes now live at the grace of their employees. People can work anywhere, you know. Especially if they're the least bit net savvy, they have a choice of who they're going to work for. Well, an awful lot of people who are just what we call civilians instead of just human beings, working at home, working in small offices, really need to know how to, you know, what to do with their business on the net. And that's where you guys come in. The phone company's not going to help them with it. The cable company's not going to help them with it. And if the municipality builds it out, they're not going to help them with it either. They're going to be like the guys you call when you got potholes, right? And what they need a service provider for that also, you know. So that's, I mean, there's going to be an explosion of business that's going to take place when it dawns on everybody, wait a minute, the net is symmetrical. The net is wide open. You can go both ways in this thing. I can set up a business on this thing. I can improve my business all these different kinds of ways and produce and not just consume. So I'd actually advise you to get the term consumer out of your mind. It's a relic of the TV age. It's a relic of 150 years of the industrial age when you had a few producers and a lot of consumers. Everybody's a producer now. Everybody can participate in this thing, but they don't all know how. In fact, there's like a vast reservoir of ignorance waiting to be relieved by people that know what they're doing.
But there's some really important, I think, headspace points that the folks in this room have to digest. You know, I think that it's always been my experience talking to service providers in general, and ISPs in particular, that many, I won't go as far as most, really view tech support as a cost center, as opposed to, you know, the place where their business is differentiated, the place where, the place in the business that's strategic. You know, I've kicked around this idea. I've actually used it in a presentation here. By the way, the idea I'm going to just talk about in a second, I've said it inside of Two Cows, and I've said, hey, don't you think it would be a great idea if we did this? And everybody says, yeah, that would be a great idea. You know, it's a year later, and I'm still waiting for somebody to do it. So, you know, here it is, and whoever wants it. You know, imagine if every time one of your customers signed up, and, you know, most of you will give them free web space, if they got outbound that said, hey, do you have a digital camera? You know, well, if you have a digital camera, make an appointment with our customer representatives to help you spend 15 minutes on the phone and show you how to post a picture. And I guarantee you that if you did that one thing for that one customer, two things would happen. One, that customer would never leave you. You would be the story they told. You would be the vase in the Volkswagen Beetle, or the, you know, the fantastic experience that people had with an iPod when they first used it. The second thing that would happen is that person would probably show that picture, now posted online, to 10 or 15 or 20 other people, all of whom would say verbally, well, how did you learn how to do that? And the thought bubble would be, you're a bigger idiot than I am, and if you could do it, I could do it. And you know, those right there is the most obvious and easy word of mouth pickup. Now, that's an example. And I think there's 100 examples. You know, you could do the same thing with here's how you do here's how you whitelist an email in a spam filter, and it would be that same bit of delight.
Yeah, a couple things there. One is there's a relic of the dot-com age, which is still with us with the Web 2 age, I might add. It's sort of the second wave of the same thing. And it's caused by venture capital, okay? There's this weird notion that a lot of VCs still have that every damn thing in the world needs a revenue model. Everything needs a business model. So what's your business model? How are you going to make money with that? Well, there's a lot of things you don't make money with. They're just, how do you make money with your cell phone? How do you make money with your shoes? How do you make money with your pants or your driveway? These things are costs, right? They're just things that cost a little bit of money or some amount of money.
There's jokes in there, but
I know. I was waiting. Anyway, but my point is that we have to give up challenging to make money with everything. We make an awful lot of money because of stuff. The because effect is much bigger than the with effect. We make money because of tech support. We make money because of the net, quite frankly.
And, you've talked lots about because of Linux, because of
right, exactly. SQL. Linux because itself has no revenue model, and it made Google possible, it made Yahoo possible, it made Amazon possible, and eBay and all these other companies, and most of us, frankly. I mean, it's a zero you can put in your spreadsheet, and that's what it does. You make money because of that thing.
Now, I meant to, and I'm going to come right back to you.
Okay.
I meant to, about 20 minutes ago, say, you know what, Doc and I talked about it, and we decided that, you know, we don't want to wait till the end for questions. So anybody who has questions during, you know, please just put up your hand. John will come over with a microphone.
He's over there with a microphone.
As often happens, we get off on tangents, and, you know, we've got to bring it back.
So the other thing is, and you said earlier, you know, use Flickr a lot. You know, do you know that it's actually hard? And it is. I'm just curious, how many people here use Flickr or something like it to post digital photographs? A number of you.
But
not as many as you'd think. Yeah. Okay, how many of you who have your hands up have a real hard time getting other people to use it, like relatives or somebody? I mean, I have two or three relatives. I have bought them pro accounts on Flickr and have been unable to get them to use it. One cousin of mine says, I said, why don't you use it? He says, I don't do anything that requires a password. Okay? Think about that, okay? I actually think we need to relieve that problem. And I think the answer to relieving that problem isn't going to come from any big company. It's going to come from somebody else, somebody who's close to customers, like my cousin, who says, I don't want to use a password. Now solve my problem.
I mean, one of the things we were joking about earlier is I think somebody could have a business just simply providing tech support for Flickr. You know,
don't worry
about the tool. Don't worry about the branding. You know, just help people do stuff. You know, the alternative title that we were kicking around at the very beginning was the 1,000-person telco. And, you know, the important point with that kind of phrase, the 1,000-person telco, was to call out really clearly that there is a great business in providing internet services to 1,000 customers. And 5,000 customers, and 10,000, and by the way, 500. And if you run the numbers, and I've done this, I'm like a business model guy. That's what I love to do, distribution and business models. And I can run the numbers on 1,000 customers and show you that the owner-operators of a business like that can make a couple hundred thousand dollars a year that they're able to pull out of it, which is great money. And I think that we all spend too much time thinking about, you know, how can I get more customers, and not enough time thinking about, you know, how can I do more for the customers I already have.
Yeah, I actually think that there, and I'm curious about this, and I'm not familiar with all of your businesses, but I'm wondering how many of you have moved into verticals. I'm thinking, for example, like, let's think of a popular, let's take your idea of the 1,000-person telco, or the Netco, which I think of as it's not just telephone. How many of those are organized around a discrete population that's, say, a church, a school, a business, or a cluster of businesses, or, you know, even if it's a kind of a broad horizontal thing, like small office or home office, like a specialty of some kind? How many are doing that, I'm wondering? There's one way back there.
I know a bunch of guys out here who are doing this in what I'd call, they're the kings of their region.
But my point is that there are communities, and, you know, you want to get into where there's word of mouth and where where the answer to the question of how do I get help with Flickr is, oh, you know, I use so-and-so. And it used to be, well, you know, I had AOL or I had some other thing like that. Now it's going to be there's some service company that's going to help me with this.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's what gets me so excited about the kind of the whole Muni Networks thing is I feel like, you know, I mean, I grew up in this industry like all of you guys, you know, starting inside of an ISP in 94, 95. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, the 90s, you know, we were all just kicking the telcos and cable co's butts because it was dial-up and you could really differentiate around customer service. They didn't, you know, we all had 14.4 modems or 28.8s or 56K when it came out, just like they did. You know, broadband changed that, and it allowed for them to be able to leverage their advantages. Big CapEx, legal, regulatory. Mm. I really feel like this Muni Networks thing is revenge of the nerds. You know, that it's everybody, you know, who used to be able to really, competing on an even playing field, just whoop up in the mid to late 90s, being able to come back and do that again. And this time, I think, you know, there isn't kind of the place to go that can take that away. Because it really calls out to me that separation between network and services. You know, network is something that people make money with, not from.
Right.
And the
right.
services, they make money from.
Right. And that's going to drive things.
Yeah. So, John, did you have something out there?
Here's a question over here up front.
Yeah. We were trying to...
We want to get a lot of people in, so if we can...
I got nothing.
Make it quick, yeah.
I'm Newton Chan, SD4. In some other industry, they're very good in branding their services. Like Intel Inside, they're still lacking of branding in the ISP industry, like connected by XYZ.
So the question is, how do you do that? How do you get the branding done? Or
yeah. Well, it seems like there's a lack of branding.
Let me speak to branding.
Doc, by the way, is an old PR guy.
Yeah, I'm an old PR and advertising guy. At one point, our old agency, which is called Hodgkin, Simone & Searles, was probably the biggest high-tech agency here in Silicon Valley. We worked with, you know, parts of Sun Microsystems and Symantec and a lot of other companies. Branding is overrated. You know, what's the brand of your car repairman? What's the brand of anybody? One of the great things that I've discovered about the open source world is that the brand of any particular tool means nothing, okay? If you go to Technorati, if you go to a number of these other new sort of live web search engines, or any new search engine for the most part, a lot of them are using something called Memecached and another thing called Lucene that a guy named Doug Cutting came up with. There are all these goofy names that don't mean anything, and yet people know them because they use them. If you do good work, if you do really good work, the word spreads. It just spreads. And that's, I think there's, you know, doing the work matters more than anything else. You know, that Apple and Intel, all the big companies are not good examples for you.
That's exactly the point because, I mean, that kind of concept of, you know, 1,000-person telco, to me, you know, the important thing thematically is you don't need a brand. You need to do great work for 1,000 people. You know, if you're a great mechanic or a great plumber, you know, boy, you have way more work than you can handle. You know, if you're a great contractor, repair.
Why,
am I not on?
I think you're on back there?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
You are? Okay, thank you.
I was drooping, but, okay. You know, not completely done.
Just trying to help out.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. The you know, and so at the end of the day, I think that too many of us get wrapped up in this industry in, you know, the concept of brand, buying customers with AdWords, et cetera. I think, you know, that relative to helping somebody use their email better, helping somebody put a photo online with their new digital camera, just pales in comparison. You know, you look at the service providers historically who have had brand. There's two things about them. They've had lots of customers. They haven't necessarily made lots of money, and they rarely provided great customer service. So, I mean, I just don't think that that's the right place to aspire to. You know, if you believe, if you can internalize and believe that that customer experience, that customer service is your strategic competitive advantage, brand becomes irrelevant.
I think to that end, actually, I'm going to let Marlon ask a question here in a second. But, Elliot, I sat in a session of yours not too long ago where you were talking about the example of your a set of customers, your larger customers, and where they acquire additional customers is really within their current set rather than and driving word of mouth, increased adoption of additional services and so on. And maybe you want to just share that example with everyone because I think word of mouth itself
sure,
is
sure. I mean, critical. It's even further than that. Certainly our biggest customers do that well, a couple of whom are in this room. But, the data I was sharing was really from the two biggest internet retailers in the world. In fact, I could throw Yahoo in there too, but GoDaddy and 1&1 both get in excess of 60% of their new customers from word of mouth. And then, I kind of go through this mathematical example, that shows you the kind of new customers that you get from other than word of mouth for most businesses represents no more than 15% of their revenue. And I should say for the most active businesses represents no more than 15% of their revenue. And for most, it's somewhere between 3 and 5%. So it's like focus on the 95, not the 5.
I'd also say that you have to expose what you do and talk about it. I think it's really important, for example, no matter what your business is, to blog about it. I mean, it's a personal example, but it's a profound one for me, okay? So I've been with Linux Journal one way or another for 10, 12 years, and Linux Journal is one of the original web companies. All their archives are up on the web. Google finds a lot of them. I co-wrote a best-selling book that started on the web, and maybe the only book I know of that ever started on the web. It still sells well in 9 languages, and I blog. If you look up my name, about 90% of the links come from the blog. Okay, the blog is the most leveraged thing I do, and all I'm doing is emailing to the world. That's all a blog is. It's CC:world. That's what writing a blog is. Anybody tells you, how do you find time to blog? Ask them, how do you find time to email? Because it's the same damn thing. And it's not, and you can, if you say the wrong thing, you can go back in there and correct it. It's a real easy thing to do. That's one thing. I mean, that is so self-promotional. You have to be involved. You have to practice what you're speaching.
Though, because, Doc, there's two things about that. One, you write exceptionally well. Two, you blog very broadly. So I want to ground that, because I don't want the people in here to kind of think, oh, I've got to write a blog like Doc. If you do nothing but blog about your business, and when I say that, network trouble, boil out of spam, hey, did anybody see the local?
Expose your problems.
Whatever.
Talk about things that didn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
Be human.
You could be just talking about your business with your customers, and that is hugely powerful. There's a transparency about it, and there is a connection about it that really ground that. People, just if you put yourself in a customer mind frame and you think about the businesses that you connect with and the business relationships that you connect with, they're always about, kind of one-to-one. There is that service person at the counter who treated you well, that waitress who always serves you at the certain table in the restaurant, etc. And that's what every one of you guys can do with your business.
Yeah, it's about having relationships. I mean, relationships to me are the great frontier for service companies. It's not just a matter of, well, how do we serve the customer? Like worse, the whole notion that I'm going to deliver a service like it's a quantity. It's not. You don't deliver service to your children or to your spouse. You have a relationship with them. In the most successful businesses are one where we have real relationships with people. And if you're a small or medium sized business or even the largest businesses here, it can scale for you guys. I mean, it's not going to work necessarily for the
perfectly.
Yeah.
Let me give you another just drop dead easy idea you can do when you get back home next week. That relates to that. If you've got when I say a blog, just a place you can communicate with your customers. Imagine that you have a little internal contest for your support guys, and any one of them who writes up a good sort of problem and solution, and you post it, you buy them a free lunch at the place where your guys always go for lunch. And that's it. They will trip over each other to find, and they all have them. I've helped 15 people with exactly this problem. So now let me just write about it. Extra marks if you include screenshots. No, don't turn that up. Just let me find the sweet spot. You know, extra marks if you include screenshots or, you know, you really want to go nuts, do it using some you know, video blogging as they solve it. But even simple text, the guys will trip over themselves to be the one who gets the free lunch that week, and your customers will get such a leveraged benefit from it.
You know, I just thought of a piece of business that one of you guys may pick up on. Okay, yesterday, Gannett newspaper is the first newspaper to announce, you know what, we're going to take citizen journalism seriously, we're going to turn our readers into writers, and we're going to do it with 91 newspapers, USA Today, and 90 local and regional newspapers across the country. They're very committed for doing this. Now, how are they going to do it? How isn't somebody who wants to be a citizen journalist, wants to participate with the newspaper in, say, Fort Myers, Florida? That's one of the Fort Myers News Press is one example. Okay, how are they going to do it? I think, you know, some service company can approach those guys or partner with Gannett and say, okay, we'll help you guys, your citizen journalists, work with you guys, and we've got services that'll help us do that.
Well, by the way,
and somebody will pay for it.
Take that a step further. Anybody with 1,000 customers, I guarantee you, and then John, yeah, you got it, I guarantee is going to have 10, 20, 50 independent writers.
Right.
Who are just, you know, kind of piecework writers,
yeah,
who would love to pick up something like that at a local level.
Right, and just think of the PR involved in that. You're working with a newspaper.
Go ahead, John.
Marlon Schaefer with Odessa Office and WISPA. We're reading a lot lately about the triple play and the importance of the triple play as it comes to servicing and establishing relationships with our customers. Obviously, most of the small providers aren't going to be able to provide triple play.
Yeah.
And my wife the other day was a great example. She missed her Grey's Anatomy, so she just downloaded it on the internet. No cable company or provider, TV provider needed. What do you guys think is going to be the future of the triple play?
Well, I just want to point out very quickly, as a customer, and when it comes to my cable internet provider, I am a consumer, not a customer, unfortunately. I could care less about the triple play. I think it matters to telcos and cable cos and their quarterly earnings and nothing else. And so, I mean, to me, it's an irrelevancy as it relates to, you know, the businesses of the people in this room.
I think triple play is an unfortunate term. I think it tries. It's about, unfortunately, at the municipal level, at the regional level. It's about trying to find a revenue model, one of those, you know, how do we make money with this thing? You never, you know, the cities never said, how do we make money with our roads? They knew if they put in a water system, if they put in a road system, if they put in a better sewage treatment system, if they put in an airport, that is going to be a tide that lifts all boats. It's a one-time cost and mostly maintenance after that. Now, there are exceptions to that. But by trying to go into a business that two really big industries are doing really well at providing and competing with them, I think is inherently a mistake.
Yeah, they're, by the way, beating the crap out of each other over
and
price.
And they're beating it. You know, these guys are already competing with each other. They've got lots of huge resources. People are used to, you have to pry them away from the cable company. You have to pry them away from the phone company. I think it's actually a mistake. I think you're better off eating the cost, raising the, you know, sales tax a quarter cent for 2 years, or whatever it's going to take. I mean, the general estimation, even for bringing fiber to homes, is maybe $2,000 a home. That's a big flat screen. It's not that much money, okay?
That's a small flat screen.
It's a small flat screen, okay? And people are buying these things, you know? So it's not like it's an impossible cost. It costs more to trench, you know, to do, you know, some road work. It just can get thrown in with the road work. I mean, it doesn't have to be a big, bad, ugly problem. I've learned just from talking to people in city government in Santa Barbara. There are a lot of people in city government and regional government that think creatively about these things. They're strapped for cash. They don't want to necessarily lay it out. But there are some people that are really good wonks that are good at thinking those things through. Now, that said, I think it's interesting. If your wife downloading Grey's Anatomy, is that part of a triple play? Or is that just...
I think he was saying that happened probably on YouTube or something.
It's not even TV anymore, okay? Yeah. Video is just one thing that happens on the net. It's going to happen in all kinds of forms. What we now call cable, what we now call television, is being utterly and completely unbundled at this point. It's going into little pieces. A real quick one. How many people here watch the evening news? wow. Five people? This is impressive. You know, I mean, I've been at conferences, but I can't get anybody in the room who can name the four main TV networks anymore.
I mean,
who even cares about Katie Couric? I ask people who have heard of Katie Couric. Hardly anybody did. It doesn't, you know, the old system is so broken. Please don't envy it. It's really, you know, let it finish doing what it does. In the long run, here's an interesting thing. In the long run, you're going to see more and more people, especially younger ones, energized by what they get off the net in the same way as they're now de-energized by vegetating in front of the TV. The couch potato is a dying breed. It's a self, you know, it's a self-killing system that's on its last legs, I think even if some of us do veg from time to time. There's a question over there. Yeah. Scott?
What about home networking? A lot of people I know don't really need to figure out Flickr, but they'd really like some help getting their home networks working, and their cable co, their telco, they're not going to help them. And who's doing this?
Eden. You know, it's a great, it's one of those places, you know, like, to me, like spyware and, you know, all sorts of malware, where people would be thrilled to pay to get it done. Now, they're doing that for a reason, so I think that's great, and that's a one-time opportunity. But I think that anybody who picks up on that opportunity, you know, you've now solved, you know, a very important problem. One of the things I say a lot of times in my presentations is, you know, we are all in the business of making our customers not feel stupid. And when it comes to running a home wireless network, you know, it's a classic, I feel stupid. And if you tick that box, you know, for somebody, you know, boy, they're going to give you first crack at a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great way to get your foot in the door, and for that matter, to keep it running. I mean, I'm a pretty geeky guy, and I'd pay, say, $5 a month for somebody who could come out and restart the hub switch thing that didn't work the first time. I mean,
Doc, you know, all you got to do is unplug it and plug it back in.
No. That used to be the easy way, but what's happened is that, I mean, like, for example, you know, your wireless router now wants you to call into the mothership before it's now authentic and real and gets turned on, and a lot of these things come with firewalls defaulted in complex ways. And
does he bring chicken bones as well?
It's a huge issue. I mean, it's really a huge issue. If you're hooking up anything at home, it really sucks. And if you're trying to, I mean, I don't know where you find the talent to do it, actually, because there's so many, ways.
I'll tell you, every guy here is going to have customer support guys that would love to make some extra money on the weekends, and has tons of customers who would love to pay somebody to come and do that.
Yeah.
Right? So it's...
Okay. Hi, Alex Goldman, ISP Planet.
Hey, Alex.
When I saw the title of this thing, I thought we were going to talk a bit about how regulation has worked in the past, about rate of return regulation. I think there's some people like Marlon or Donnie back there who are building local networks, putting a lot of money into it, who wouldn't mind being the local utility, wouldn't mind having rate of return regulation on the amount of money they put into their networks. I'd like you to address that.
Wait, I want to make sure that... I
need to know what you... I know about regulations. I don't know what a rate of return regulation is.
So, like, if you put $1 million into rolling out fiber in Rochester, Minnesota this year, you're guaranteed 10% of that.
Yeah, the muni stories that are doing that I see getting the most traction, and I mean, you know, Philadelphia was like this to some extent, San Francisco was like this, a whole bunch of the others, you know, are the ones where they're saying, okay, you know, you come in competitive bidders, and you know, you tell us what you provide the network for, and they're choosing among that. I think fixed rate of return is a trap, and it's a trap that led to the historical telco and cable co industries. You know, when people talk about muni nets and you know, any of the kind of the free wireless as being, you know, kind of socialist or anti-capitalist, you know, that is coming from two industries, cable and telco, that are completely creatures of regulation. They are you know, they are government at some level granted monopolies. And when I say at some level, you know, in some places in the world that's municipal, and some it's state or provincial, and in some it's national. You know, but those are, you know, the most anti-competitive, you know, socialist type industries going. And, you know, what they're really saying is not, you know, we think regulation is bad. It's we think this regulation is bad because it's not in our favor. You know, so it's a completely fallacious argument. You know, rate of return is not necessary to make for a great, robust, open network environment.
No, I'd agree with all that. I think that it's a mistake to look for a rate of return on a pure utility. That's why I insisted on calling this, you know, utilities. It's about utilities. It's like you don't look for a rate of return on your driveway or on your roads. There is a cost to putting it in. There's no doubt about that. It's non-trivial. All infrastructure of that sort, whether you're putting in a dam and filling a valley with water, or if you're, you know, putting a tunnel in or whatever else you're doing, is non-trivial. It's going to cost some money. But the difference is that, I mean, like in Santa Barbara, you know, it will be debating forever widening Highway 101. If everywhere we're burying, you know, telephone poles and that infrastructure, we just put some fiber down there, it's covered. An interesting question is, what is the first cost of the net? In its largest capacity, it's blinking light. That's it. There's no physical difference between dark fiber and lit fiber. It's just passing light. It's an amazing thing how much capacity is actually there if you put it in the first place.
I think
I think it was at UCSB, and I was asking, well, how do you increase your capacity? Well, we take another card out of here, and we stick it in there, and now we've just doubled our capacity. What's the cost in that? I mean, it's, you know, a $500 card is what the cost is there. And there's the carriers, bless them, I'm not here to knock them. They have to live. They have to be part of this ecosystem. But they're used to looking at ways to get billing events out of everything, okay? I have a Verizon phone sitting over there. I am going to throw it through a wall. They want to bill me for, you know, moving a photograph between this device and that device. It's insane. There is no actual cost there. I'm a captive of that silo. What we're doing right now is breaking up silos all over the place. That's the big thing that the net does. You put in that infrastructure, and all kinds of silos get obsoleted, and all kinds of new business gets to establish itself. Look at what the new business is. Don't look at the old businesses as models, right, because they're bad.
And, you know, there's a really important point that I want to make sure that I put out to all you guys, especially if something is happening in your area. You know, one of the biggest challenges, ironically now, to some of the muni network stuff that's going on is coming from, local civil society. You know, San Francisco's free Wi-Fi has been stopped in its tracks by local groups saying, well, what's in this for us? And it's guys like the people in this room, not the telcos and not the cable cos, who can stand up at a meeting and say, let me tell you what's in it for you, and let me tell you, you know, I'm a local business, here's how many people I employ, here's how many customers I have locally, and here's how it will help all of those people and all of those small businesses. And it's just such an important contribution that you guys are uniquely positioned to make to this whole movement, and I don't want to be too...
Yeah, an interesting challenge for you is that, and this is a question I've wanted answered, rather than fight the telcos and the cable cos, help them think of what the benefits of incumbency are other than squeezing people for more of the same. Because I think they're enormous. I really do. I think they need partners.
You don't agree? I'm jaded on that. No, I've tried to speak to senior people.
I know, I have
too.
I have too.
For years. And saying, you know what, if you just became what you are, which is a network provider, boy, I've got an army of guys who will layer on top of it. They'll provide good service. You don't, and they just can't get there. So I've given up on that.
I have not. It's interesting. I was talking to an official with one of the local carriers where I live, and you know, they come to our meetings and they're cooperative and so forth. There's a lot of stop energy there, and and they'll say ridiculous things like, "You want fiber? We'll be glad to give it to you. It's $50,000 and $10,000 a month after that. But that's our deal for everybody." You know, well, what's their problem? It's theirs. You know, well, no. And I was talking about asymmetry, and they said, "Well, you know, we test our lines. We look at what people's usage is, and we know that their usage is mostly asymmetrical. Nobody's really uploading anything. Well, they don't have the. It's not provision for that. How can they?" I said, listen, I go down to Starbucks to upload stuff because I can't do it at home if I'm uploading a lot of it. They have a T1 at Starbucks. You know, I've got 3 megs down and 300K up. Where's that at? So, but an interesting thing is their eyes lit up one time. I said, okay, you know, we live in a town where we have earthquakes and we have fires, and wouldn't it be cool if you guys provided offsite storage? You've got the plant. You've got room. Why don't you do that? And their eyes actually lit up that one time. Like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something there.
Yeah, that's usually when they quit and go into a startup.
But. Yeah, well, that could be too. But my point is that there's, you know, there are, well, that could be, yeah.
Hey guys, John McCown, president of Delaware.net. I have a lot of respect for both of you. I have your book, Doc, and Elliot, I wanted to thank you publicly for giving ISPs an alternative to network solutions back in the day when there was none.
and thank you for the T-shirt, John.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that you accomplished there will make you a hero in this room, you know, forever. If I could respectfully
work it for all you can.
Yeah. If I could respectfully disagree with just a couple of comments I heard. First, it is important to make sure that home users can get online and they can get networking support. I remember back in 1997 when we started, we would drive out and help, you know, elderly folks get their dial-up set up. Those days are thankfully long gone for us. And I think a lot of folks in the room are now into hosting. They're into maybe other forms of access. But the money really isn't in the residential space. I think a lot of people here are reinventing themselves, and they're going into applications. There's talk about YouTube, and there's talk about, you're selling blogs.
Yep.
So to me, I see a lot of the growth in the applications and in the social networking, leveraging that. You guys mentioned that with blogs a little bit. So I'm kind of interested to hear what you have to say about targeting small businesses and how some of these folks in the room could do that.
So there's some semantics in there that I want to really tease out. You know, first of all, you said, you know, kind of moved on from residential. If we all agree that, you know, Soho and Self is the largest employer in Santa Barbara, you know, those Soho businesses are consuming their internet at home, you know, which is by definition residential. I really don't like bright yellow lines drawn between kind of home and business, because I think that, you know, people use personal and business internet at both locations. But I think the second point...
Can I answer that? Because the business people pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know,
absolutely.
You know, ultimately, we're mostly business people in here, and we have to make money. It's nice and warm and fuzzy to go out and make sure everybody's online and the Muni wireless.
No, but I want to make sure that you heard that right. Look, I'm trying to... I don't want you to hear me say, you know, we've talked a lot about this privately on List. I'm a services guy. I think that the network is here to support services. You know, I also think that, you know, when I'm talking about that specific example, hey, help people set up a home network, you know, I think that's a great leverage point to get to services. The network is not and will not be an end in and of itself, except for very few companies. By the way, there are some of them here who do a great job with it. But, I really, whether it's setting up the home network or putting the picture up with a digital camera, the important takeaway is more thematic. So, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. You know, don't get lost in the detail. Because the important takeaway is thematic, which is that your customers have problems that you guys are uniquely positioned to solve. Don't hear me saying, here's the one you should solve. Hear me saying, that's the most important thing in your business. Now you guys go out and figure out, in your customer base, given your set of services, what the most important ones are.
Yeah. The basic point here is that there is demand out there for all kinds of stuff. And there's all kinds of demand that's waiting to be created as well. Markets get made one of two ways. Either there's a necessity that mothers your invention, or you invent something that mothers necessity. And you need to do both, okay? There are services people don't know they need yet that when as soon as they see them, they'll say, God damn it, I need that, right? And there are some that could be that going out and helping people with, you know, everybody, I guarantee you, has trouble hooking up their home network. If they're doing more than a few rooms, they're doing Wi-Fi or the rest of it, they're going to have trouble with that. But it could be, you know, this is a service like a lot of people have trouble going out, backing out of their driveway. You don't get people come out to help you back out of your driveway. I'm sorry, you're on your own for that. It could be that that's one of those kind of things. But the main point is there is an infinitude of potential business out there that I don't see any other single business category in a position to imagine out.
Yeah.
Okay, the carriers aren't going to do it. The munis aren't going
to
do it.
And let's all try who's going to do it? Infinitude in a sentence sometime this week. So.
Over there?
Yeah, I think if you guys have some comments here to wrap things up, the exhibit hall is about to open. So if you'd like to say a couple last things here.
Personally, I just want to, thank you guys. Hey, John, thanks for the opportunity. I think, I'll give you the last word, Doc. Keep at it. I wish I could hang around for the rest of the conference. And, John, please stop scheduling this up against other stuff so I can hang out for a while. So thanks very much.
They're scheduling against us, yeah. By the way.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. I guess a parting remark would be it's still really, really early in this thing. It's very, very early in the evolution of the Internet. There's endless opportunity wherever something isn't clear. My wife said something to me she's not a techie, but she's really smart about business. A few weeks ago, we were just sitting around, and she said, you know what? We're halfway through a 100-year cycle in a transition from analog to digital. We're halfway through that. We got another 50 years to go. And then she jumped to a conclusion, which was, that means we've got another 50 years of prosperity. There's all kinds of opportunity here. So again, I think it's a matter of who's going to imagine out what the opportunities are. I think you guys can do it.
Yep. And I guess, maybe the thing that I'd add is that I really, really encourage you all to recognize that customer relationship part of your business is A, what you're generally best at, B, where your strongest competitive advantage is. So don't kind of push it away. Love it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Great job.